I'm Jeff Sickinga, Executive Director of the Ashbrook Center, and this is The American Idea, where we discuss the ideas, people, and events that have made America what it is today. We believe that by understanding our history and our principles, we can better live up to the promise of the American founding and preserve our ongoing experiment in self-government. Welcome to The American Idea.
Welcome, everyone, to this episode of The American Idea. Today, we're going to be talking about a disturbing topic, but a topic that is unfortunately, terribly in the news again, but a topic that deserves conversation, discussion, and some thoughtful historical analysis. And that's the topic of political violence in the United States. I'm joined for our conversation today by our old friend, my personal friend, and a friend, of course, of this podcast, the occasional host of this podcast, Professor John Mosier. John is professor of history at Ashland University and chair of the Department of History and Political Science. He is academic chair of our Master of Arts in American History and Government program and a prolific author, has written a number of books on the 20th century and 20th century American history. John is a keen student of American history, its principles, its animating events, and the important things that we need to know and can learn from American history. So great to have you with us today, John. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, you're most welcome, Jeff. Glad to be here.
Well, obviously, we're talking about this because of the terrible events, recent events, the attempted assassination of former President Donald Trump. Obviously, assassinations and attempted assassinations have happened before in American history. We know certainly about several presidential assassinations, but I don't think we've had an attempted assassination that at least the public has known about of a president or a presidential candidate for a number of decades now.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about an assassination attempt in the sense of somebody approaching the president with a gun and shooting, there hasn't been one since 1982. But 2018, there were pipe bombs that were delivered to a number of prominent political figures. None of those detonated, and nobody was killed. 2011, you had somebody spraying the White House when Obama was president, spraying the White House with gunfire. It all depends on how you define an assassination attempt.
Sometimes I think people think that, certainly because of the times we live in, that maybe political violence is a modern American phenomenon.
Yeah.
Take us back a little bit in American history. What's the record of political violence in the United States historically?
Well, again, we need to define what political violence is. Violence associated with the political process was a common part of American politics in the mid to late 19th century. The film Gangs of New York with Daniel Day-Lewis illustrates that. It was routine for fights to break out, even shootings to take place over the collection of and counting of votes on election day. But if we say that by political violence we're talking about actual attempts to kill a leading political figure, those have been rarer, but they do go far back. The first attempted assassination of a U.S. president that we know of was of Andrew Jackson, by someone who was found not guilty by virtue of being criminally insane. And in fact, if you look at most of the assassination attempts or actual assassinations that have taken place, they fall into the category of the deranged lunatic, which may make for a fun story, but isn't terribly interesting. It doesn't really help us understand anything broader.
So tell us then, if you a little bit about the 19th century and political violence in the sense that I've mentioned, not scuffles, skirmishes, or even shootings on election day, but actual assassination attempts. Obviously, we know about Abraham Lincoln's assassination, but it seemed for a while there that assassination attempts were not really part of American political tradition, political legacy, considered sort of off, you know, off the charts, not really permissible here. And in fact, I think even at the Constitutional Convention, maybe it was just apocryphal, but Ben Franklin was reported to have said, you know, we have to have impeachment of the president because the only alternative would be assassination.
Mm. So yeah, it's actually...
No, I was just going to say, so what about this American sort of political tradition about the assassination?
Yeah, so the great importance of the election of 1800 is it showed a transition of power from one party to another after a very contentious campaign, but without violence. And it is remarkable that you don't really have an assassination attempt against a president until 1835, when there's an attempt to kill Andrew Jackson. It was a misfire of his pistols that kept that from happening. And you go another 30 years, of course, until we get to the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. And obviously, in that case, you've got all the raw emotions coming from a civil war. The assassination of Lincoln by Booth would have been unthinkable without the Civil War just having happened, and about all the hard feelings that have been generated by that. It's only really toward the end of the century that you start to see increasing frequency, and again, some of those are random deranged people. Charlie Guiteau kills Garfield because he didn't like civil service reform or something, you know, and the guy was simply mad. John Flamang Schrank, who shoots Teddy Roosevelt at close range in 1912 because he claimed that he was visited by the ghost of William McKinley, who said, Don't let Roosevelt be elected a second time. So these sorts of things come up. But in addition to those, in the late 19th century, you had advocates, people who were of reasonably sound mind, but belonged to very radical political sects, anarchists in particular. There was a huge rush of anarchist violence, not just in the United States, but around the world. And it was an anarchist, Leon Czolgosz, who was responsible for the murder of William McKinley in 1901. So you do see this rise of politically based assassinations then, but anarchist violence eventually dies out as well. There was an attempt on FDR's life when he was president-elect in Miami in early 1933. Giuseppe Zangara was his name, and he was some kind of communist anarchist type who wanted to destroy the American system. It seems that for our purposes, the most interesting and the most dangerous, I suppose, are ones that don't really fall into either of those categories, of either being a deranged lunatic or a follower of some obscure, you know, extremist political sect. Who does that leave us with? Well, it leaves us with John Wilkes Booth. It may leave us. The one that I have intentionally not mentioned so far is John F. Kennedy, because there are still so many questions about exactly what was going on there. And we still have, of course, huge questions about what caused this individual, Matthew Crooks, to open fire at that rally on Saturday evening. And since he's dead, we can't ask him. I keep waiting to hear results of interviews with parents or family members that can tell us more about what was motivating him. But these assassination attempts are the ones that lead us to ask, what's going on here? This is more than just a crazy person with a gun. We can always count on them coming out of the woodwork every once in a while. But if the reason why there is so much discussion about what happened on Saturday, aside from the obvious, is it has led to all kinds of accusations being hurled by people who are saying, well, is the Democrats' rhetoric responsible for radicalizing this guy? What were his politics? Is there something deeper here? And we also saw that to a certain extent after the Kennedy assassination. Even though it was clear that the shooter or a shooter was this kind of weird Marxist guy who belonged to the Fair Play for Cuba committee, James Reston wrote this editorial suggesting that it was us somehow. It was the American people and this culture of violence that appeared that really was responsible for the death of John Kennedy. And I'm seeing some of that out there now, just in the last couple of days.
Yeah, I was thinking even of President Biden's address to the nation very recently, right, where he came on and said, we maybe need to cool down the political rhetoric.
Right.
On the assumption that somehow heated political rhetoric during a campaign year could be a causal factor in attempted assassinations.
Yeah. And I'm not sure I buy that. I mean, we have always had very polarized, negative rhetoric. 1800 is the classic example. People go back to the accusations that were held back and forth between the Jeffersons and the Adams supporters, who were as nasty as anything that we've ever heard. Yet there were no assassination attempts. There were no attempts to kill Adams or Jefferson. So I don't know to what extent political rhetoric really has that effect.
Well, I think a lot of people are wondering, I mean, certainly they're asking questions now about how the would-be assassin this past weekend was able to get in the position where they are. But then when people look back historically, I certainly have had a number of students, as I'm sure you have too, say, how is it possible? I mean, there's still mystery surrounding the Lincoln assassination, of course, but an attempted assassination of Andrew Jackson or the assassination of Garfield or McKinley. I think people say, man, in that short of amount of time, relatively speaking, several decades, you have a number of assassinations or attempted assassinations of presidents. And some people wonder, how is it possible that people could get that close to a president, especially with the old-fashioned weapons that they had in those days? How is it possible that a president could even be approached in such a way that it would be even conceivable for someone to think, oh yeah, I can get close enough to take a shot?
Yeah, the security measures we have today are a fairly modern development. We know that in the previous instances of assassination attempts, you would have assassins get very close. They would follow presidents over long periods, looking for an opportunity where they can get right up next to them. The murder of Garfield, Charlton Guiteau was able to walk right up to him on a train platform and fire. This was the same.
And that, John, for our listeners, remind us, that's 1880, 81?
Yeah, correct. So it is harder to understand how it can happen today. When there are Secret Service everywhere, that they're checking out every location. So right. When we learn that they're supposed to be a secure...
John, did presidents in the past not have security details?
Or if they did, there would have been one or two bodyguards. Not a professional security detail like we have today, and a large security detail.
Before we continue with our conversation, I'd like to take a moment and ask you to learn a little more about the Ashbrook Center and how you can help us continue our work with teachers, students, and citizens.
I'm Chad Kiefer, Director of Philanthropy and Strategic Partnerships here at Ashbrook. At its heart, America's story is about the lives of patriots who have given their last full measure of devotion to preserve and protect what it means to be an American. But the tragic truth is that the American story is being rewritten as one of oppression and despair. Back in 1776, the founders took a chance when they created a new government built on principles of liberty. They took a chance on America. Now I'm challenging you to do the same. Your gift to Ashbrook today reaches students, teachers, and citizens across the country, helping them to understand why America is worthy of their devotion. With so many forces eroding our history and taking away from our principles, isn't it time we give America a chance? Your investment is encouraged now more than ever. Please visit us today at ashbrook.org/support.
Is that a matter of resources or people thought, certainly after Abraham Lincoln is assassinated, the idea that a president can be assassinated is in people's minds. Garfield is assassinated, and yet only two decades later, McKinley is assassinated. Was there just a kind of failure to act, a thought that won't happen again, or a thought that maybe it does, but the president shouldn't have a large security detail? What historically has been the thinking?
I think some of it might be the attitude. It's a terrific question, by the way, and I can only speculate. One is the idea that the president himself needs to be someone of the people. There's that great story of how Andrew Jackson opened his home on the inaugural. Right. And for days, anyone can come and go and drink the president's hard cider. Anyone could have killed Jackson at that time. So the president, I think, therefore, has become is certainly a more important figure today and more of a distant figure. Right, the presidents of the 19th century, we think of Lincoln as an obvious exception, but in the assassination of any president would have been major news, obviously, but presidents were not even regarded as the most important force in government. Right? Congress was generally regarded, after all, that was Article I of the Constitution. The idea that you're going to have this huge security apparatus surrounding the president is a more recent development that I think goes along with the rise in presidential power.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So that even would it have been possible for ordinary citizens to actually enter the White House, for example?
Until recently, there wasn't even much protection around the White House. Yeah, I mean there would have been guards watching over it, so people aren't going to break in. But it was possible for much of U.S. history for people to go up and knock on the White House door, and then there would be somebody to receive them and say, "Is this person worth the president's time?" But it used to be not unusual for presidents to come to see me. Okay, I'm gonna talk to them. It seems very strange today. But there was this attitude that the president is not that distant of a figure and not that grand of a figure, and let's face it, not that important of a figure.
And the idea that a large security apparatus and palace guards is somehow monarchic.
That has to go along with it, right? The same reason there was such a hesitation for so long to having a standing army in the United States. A standing army is a sign of royal authority. It's not fitting for a republic such as ours.
Mm. So what about, obviously now it's the Secret Service who's been assigned to protect the presidents and former presidents, and obviously there's questions about the actions of the Secret Service in this past weekend, but I'm sure some of our listeners are interested, I know I am, in the Secret Service itself. When does it start? I know that it's a branch of the Treasury Department, which is always a little surprising to me. And that it has other duties besides presidential protection, right. Dealing with counterfeit, for example. And nowadays, I would imagine electronic monetary crimes and things like that. But is there something, when does the Secret Service get involved in protecting presidents, and when does that become? Was that originally its mission, and then it did something else, or was it vice versa? What do we?
Yeah, as you say, the Secret Service was originally part of the Treasury Department, and it was formed in 1865 with nothing to do with the fact that Abraham Lincoln had been assassinated, but to deal with what was regarded as a more serious problem: the amount of counterfeit currency that was out there. So the Secret Service was originally a branch of the Treasury designed to make sure that the currency was sound and the counterfeiters were prosecuted. It's not really until after McKinley was assassinated in 1901 that the Secret Service starts providing presidential protection. And then really eventually became the...
And then now I think it's under the Department of Homeland Security, right? Because
correct, as of 2003.
It's taken off of its Treasury role.
Right.
And so that... So the presidents then really, so what you're saying is though for the 20th century, presidents have had some Secret Service protection, even if it's been relatively small numbers of agents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in increasing numbers as time has gone on, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes when we think of political violence in the form of assassination, we think only of presidents, but obviously, there are members of Congress. Steve Scalise, for example, was very severely wounded by attempted assassination, I think I would call it. What up in American history, what about other attempted assassinations or assassinations of other prominent public figures? Mm. Are there any that come to your mind as especially important?
To be honest, I haven't really looked into that.
Was it Preston Brooks who comes across the Congress? I mean, I guess that's not really assassination by a citizen, a civilian against a political.
Right, public. Right. Yeah, caning, I mean, absolutely qualifies as political violence when, Preston Brooks beats Charles Sumner half to death with his cane. And that was not the only instance of violence on the floor of the House or Senate, but I tend to place that, as you say, in a different category from what somebody trying to kill the president.
Right. Well, obviously, fortunately, it's terrible that there was loss of life this weekend. Fortunately, of course, the former President Trump was not killed. Mm-hmm. And there have been a number of failed assassination attempts, right? Even in the 20th century. I mean, there's many, I'm sure, that we don't know about as the public, right?
Sure.
That's
sure.
When things are working properly security-wise, we don't know them because the attempt is not made.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking that there were, if I recall, there were some attempted assassinations of Gerry Ford. And some other people. What do we know about any of those attempted assassinations?
There were two attempts against Gerald Ford. I mean, of all people, if we think about a kind of a non-controversial president, there were two different, both in the same month, September of 1975. Lynette Squeaky Frome, who was a member of the Manson family, shot at him, and her gun simply misfired. It was, in fact, there wasn't a bullet in the chamber. And then, almost less than 3 weeks later, a woman named Sarah Jane Moore shot at him in San Francisco. She was, I believe, associated with the Symbionese Liberation Army, which was also behind the Patty Hearst abduction.
So there was some in the mid 70s, then there was some, I would call that politically motivated assassination attempts or political violence.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the period roughly starting with Kennedy's assassination and go up through Reagan, this was a pretty dangerous period for presidents. Even though, aside from Kennedy, none of them were successful, there were quite a few attempts. There was an earlier, it never even matured into an attempt, but this guy named Richard Paul Pavlik loaded his car up with dynamite and was going to crash into John Kennedy's car. This was when he was still president-elect. And he said, at the time, he said he didn't want to do it because his wife and children were with him. Kennedy's wife and children were with him. Pavlik said he didn't want them hurt. He said he was going to do it at a later time, but he was arrested before he could make good on that. So even in 1960, and then in 68, you've got the assassination of Robert Kennedy, the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. 72, there was a serious injury of George Wallace by someone named Arthur Brammer. So it's a violent period that reflects the turmoil that was going on in the country as a whole. Mm. And the question is, are we embarking on another period like this? I sure hope not.
Yeah, I hope not too. I mean, does it seem like in your study of American history, it does seem like there are kind of ebbs and flows
in
political violence?
Yeah, I mean, you could say there's a surge at the end of the 19th and early 20th century, and then it dies down for a while, and then comes back in the 60s and 70s, and then that ends with Reagan, and then dies down again, and it seems like in all these periods, you see the rise of a certain political language. I don't even know if that's the word I want to use, but the rise of political movements that see themselves as, or that regard politics as insufficient, right? So if you're talking about these anarchist groups, you're not going to accomplish anything by electing the person you want. You need to, there has to be direct action against the state or a direct action against the regime to bring that down. The same thing that motivates John Wilkes Booth in 1865. This whole system is rotten and needs to be destroyed. Elections aren't going to accomplish that. You have to kill someone. And that's very much the attitude that you see among the assassins or would-be assassins of the 1960s and 1970s.
When you look forward, I know it's all historians would rather look backwards than forwards, but if you look forward, what do you think about the enduring, this idea that many people have spoken about since the weekend, which is, look, we can have angry, we can have almost violent language toward each other. We can have certainly angry language toward each other politically, but it's always in the end, the American way has to be, is and has to be ballots, not bullets.
And I think that I think that the vast majority of Americans believe that very strongly. I think if the more time one spends on social media platforms like X, formerly Twitter, the more one is exposed to stuff that is frankly deranged. That goes beyond uncivil rhetoric toward one's opponents and talks about grand conspiracies, right? The regime itself is rotten and needs to be destroyed. If all I did was look at Twitter, and I want to assure you I don't, though some people think I do, I would be convinced that the country was about to collapse. Fortunately, I feel like I can step back and say, wait a minute, are the views that I see expressed on Twitter, are they in any way representative of the country at large? I don't think that's the case. Maybe I want to think that's not the case. Maybe I need to think that's not the case.
Fascinating. Well, John, thank you for taking the time to give us this brief history and insight into political violence in the United States and assassinations. It's a dark topic, but it's certainly a necessary one to think about and gain a little historical perspective and insight on. So thanks again for taking the time to join us on The American Idea.
You're quite welcome, Jeff.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The American Idea. If you enjoyed this episode, remember to subscribe at Apple Podcast, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and leave a 5-star review. If you want to learn more or get involved in Ashbrook's vital work, visit our website, ashbrook.org.